and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. Today marks a special day for our show, as today I'm joined by my new co-host, Andrew Hendricks. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I met Andrew earlier this year when I participated in the Back in Blue video game fundraiser for the Jays Care Foundation. Now, along with hosting the podcast with me, Andrew's also going to be writing for the network and has already posted his first two pieces, so I encourage you all to check them out. Now, Andrew, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background in baseball?
Sure. Well, like a lot of people growing up in the early 90s, a lot of good young Canadian boys, I kind of became infatuated with the Toronto Blue Jays. And that passion just spread throughout the years. I mean, reading books, watching the games on TV, the radio, everything. I really dove into it at a young age. And I was more or less your couch fan for the longest time. And then in 2010, I had an opportunity to volunteer at the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. And that's when things really started to get serious for me. I mean, I got to help out with the induction ceremony, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, were needed around the museum during that season. Eventually, they hired me on to help instruct their Kids on Deck program for that year. So I got to work alongside of, you know, my childhood idol, Roberto Alomar, and all kinds of other great, prominent Canadian Baseball Hall of Famers during that camp. And that led way to eventually working for the Hall of Fame in 2011, getting hired on to kind of help curate the museum as well as do a lot of, you know, tour guides and just type of social media stuff for the Hall of Fame. So that was a lot of fun. Following my tenure there, I started writing at Back in Blue, like Peter mentioned earlier. And, you know, we did a video podcast. We kind of covered everything Blue Jays for a couple of years there. And then I decided to kind of join forces here at the Canadian Baseball Network. And it's a great time. I'm really excited to, you know, join such a strong team of people like myself who are so passionately involved in baseball, and I just look to continue helping, you know, grow the cause and do my part as I could write about Canadian baseball going forward.
Well, we're all looking forward to your contributions. First two pieces were great, so.
Thanks.
Now, our first interview together that we did, we were joined by a Canadian ball player with a great story, Milwaukee Brewers closer Jim Henderson.
That's right. He came on the show. We were able to talk to him. It was my first interview for the Canadian Baseball Network, which was exciting. Got to talk to him a lot about his perseverance, you know, how he stuck it out, you know, 10 years in the minor leagues, finally got the call, got to hear his great story about how he got the call. I don't know if a lot of you guys have heard that story, but it's included in the podcast, so listen up for that. That's a good one. And we just talked about, you know, his pitching style, you know, what he can bring, his transformation to the Milwaukee Brewers closer, which is big because, of course, he filled in for Jonathan Axford. And, you know, we just had a great conversation, and it was a lot of fun getting to know the guy on a personal level to an extent, as well as just being able to talk baseball. I mean, for myself, being at my first interview for the website, I was kind of nervous, but then we got down to the basic facts of it. It's just a couple of guys talking about baseball, and it turned out really well, and I'm excited to do a lot more of these.
It was a really great interview. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll take a listen to that interview. All right, welcome back. As promised, we have Jim Henderson on the show. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to start with your childhood, high school, baseball, more importantly, and ask you when you first decided to take baseball pro, how you came to that decision.
Well, it just started with the Calgary Dogs program. We had a great group of kids and playing in Cal West Little League and all across the Little Leagues in Calgary, and the fathers just kind of got together and they wanted to take it to the next level. And it's nothing they had to force on us. Most of us kids enjoyed that opportunity. So they created a team called the Calgary Dogs, and we played like a travel schedule. But at age 13, we started playing 100 game schedules, going into Okanagan mostly every weekend, and then down to some big trips to the States. So it's from that point on that baseball got pretty serious. When you play that many games as a Canadian kid, that's pretty significant. So that's when I'd say it got pretty serious for us, for me.
Now, I was going to ask you about the dogs. You're still really involved with that program, right?
Yeah. I tend to go back in the off season. This is the first off season I'm actually living in Phoenix and kind of away from it. But in the past off seasons, I'll go back and, you know, at first I kind of chipped in with some pitching advice here and there, but the kids kind of take a break on their arms like I do in the wintertime. So I like to take the kids into the weight room and kind of teach them, you know, that the hard work in the weight room is really important in the wintertime and gets ready for the next year.
Now, you were recently honored at their banquet, right? They retired your number, correct?
Yeah, it was a great honor. It was a big surprise. They had me on as a guest speaker last year, and then I surprised all the coaches that started that team with jerseys of my own, and then they surprised me with the retired jersey. So it was a pretty special night for myself and everybody that was involved at the beginning of that program.
You were their first player to make it to the big leagues, right?
Yeah. So I guess that's an honor in itself, and you know, I can always go back and kind of hold my head high when I walk into that complex now. Down it's moved down to Okotoks, Alberta now.
You're close with John, right?
John, you're a candidate, yeah, we're really close. I mean, he'll come down and just watch games of my own in the big leagues now, and he's pretty much a second father to me. Going, and like I said, we were traveling all the time when we were in high school, so I'd always be, you know, pretty much bunked up with him wherever I went.
I want to ask you a little bit about your experience with Team Canada and wearing the red and white. First and foremost, what events and tournaments have you participated in?
In 2009, the World Cup, that was in Sweden and Italy. And then the next year, in 2010, we played the qualifier for the World Cup Pan-Am Games in Puerto Rico. Next year, played in the World Cup in Panama, also the Pan-Am Games in Mexico. And then this past year, the WBC.
What was it like winning the gold at the Pan Am Games with Team Canada?
Unbelievable. And just in my short time, you know, from that 2009 tournament, when we won bronze in Italy, that was the first time that Canada had medaled in a world competition in baseball. So to win that bronze medal and just with that almost that same group of guys, and then come back and win the gold was just incredible, because we kept on getting beat by U.S. and Cuba teams, and you quickly get caught up in the international baseball and the competitiveness of it. So that was one of the most unbelievable moments in my baseball career so far, is just playing in that type of atmosphere and that kind of competition. That's that real baseball you don't really get in the minor leagues or in the big league level. You know, I haven't played in the playoffs in the big leagues, but I'm guessing that's what the intensity would be like, and you're just kind of rooting for each other. So, you know, it's one thing to root for, to play with a bunch of friends, another thing to play for your country, and it just meant so much more winning that gold for Canada.
Who are some of your closest friends from that team? Because I know a lot of you guys are really close.
Yeah, well, Emerson Frosted definitely is one. He, you know, we were the only guys from Calgary, and we played on that Dogs team coming up, so. Definitely number one to him. And then, you know, I got along with a lot of the guys in the bullpen there with Dustin Mulliken, and Kisick was a good dude, Mulliken, Sean Hill, all those guys in the pitching staff were real great. Really liked all those guys.
Now, what about the WBC? How is that experience like in comparison to the Pan Am Games?
It was just a different level, I guess. Intensity was incredible. The fans, that's another thing I look back, and although you know, personally I was pretty disappointed in my turnout that tournament, but I take from it what the atmosphere was like, and I could hopefully gain experience from the WBC and hopefully play on the next WBC team, or if I was ever playing the Major League playoffs, I think that's the type of atmosphere and just the adrenaline that you have to kind of stay composed in, but that's what I'm trying to take away from it. To see like veteran guys, Votto and Morneau, those guys come out and those guys just come together for the country, you know, from the guys who we had, you know, in A-ball, that Talion guy who's with Pittsburgh, to MVPs. Like, we all came together as a team, and it just really showed that there's a lot of talent in Canada.
I wanted to ask you, you've been quoted saying that playing, you know, internationally for Team Canada is almost like making it to the big leagues, and that's that you kind of referred to it as your big leagues. Now that you've obviously played in the big leagues and you played internationally representing Canada, how does the two compare for you personally?
Personally, I mean, that's that, you know, there's not too many international competitions in baseball, so I have to say that, you know, making the big leagues is always that dream. I'd say now playing WBC, like, I'm just itching at getting back in 4 years and playing for your country again. You know, it's unfortunate now, like, you know, when you got in the 40-man, you can't play for those other national teams, but I'm just looking forward. I know Justin Morneau said it himself. He wants to play next WBC, and unfortunately Olympics didn't qualify, but he would have played in that too. And I kind of get that same feeling, you know, with Greg Hamilton has been with the program and playing for Ernie Witt. And it's just a great family to be a part of. It's just the best baseball in my opinion. So that's what I'd be looking forward to.
There's a lot of passion involved in playing for your country, and I mean it was evident in all the games of the WBC for everybody, really, and it was great to see the turnout that they were getting, you know, be it in the stadiums, you know, obviously playing USA, you're going to be a big draw and everything, but it was a really fun time as fans of the game to kind of watch those games, and we could definitely tell the passion was on the field for the players as well, so it's interesting to hear your perspective on that.
I think we all, as a team, we know that we have something to prove, and we, you know, that was such a big stage at WBC that we want to go out there, and every time we have a chance to prove that Canadians can play baseball against the best in the world, we want to do it. I think, you know, a couple things go our way, you know, some bounces go our way, we make some better pitches, we're definitely, can be considered one of the top teams in the world. It just didn't work out for us, but it definitely showed that we can hang with the best of the best out there in the world.
Well, I've often talked to people about how, you know, recently Canada's really kind of turned the page as far as, you know, the baseball talent, be it the players like yourself that are either in the big leagues or in the minor leagues or at the international level. Could you just comment on your views of the game in Canada and just kind of the steps that everybody's taking to really expand the game and really push things to the next level as far as like getting quality talent into the big leagues and at the international level?
I think it just kind of comes from us, the guys who've made it now. Sure. I got to play with on my junior national team, got to play with Russell Martin, Adam Lowen, Jeff Francis. We were all on the same team, and that was just a good crop of guys, and I think, you know, these guys still playing and having success, just, you know, it shows that, you know, it gives the kids in Canada something to look forward to. And like I said, Morneau and Votto, they're MVPs of the league. So, you know, they're great ambassadors for Canada. You know, like I said, we have our top players that come out and play in these tournaments. So it really shows that, you know, we have some of the best players in the world, and it shows the kids, and Brett Laurie with the Blue Jays, and that Canadian content is always big. But I'll get back to the question there. Like, I noticed, you know, Adam Stern and a lot of guys, Baseball Canada alumni, they give back to the community and the kids, and Sean Bowman runs camps, and I know Brooks McNiven. And a lot of these guys who played on these teams are going back and teaching the game to the young kids. So I think that's what's very important in promoting the game in Canada.
Oh, you're right. It's just like yourself in the Okotoks. I mean, you seem to see a lot more Canadians really lending their time, be it in the off season or, you know, before things get started. And it's great because we really are seeing a lot of people, you know, kind of take notice of the game in Canada and being taken a lot more seriously than it has been in other years. So that's great to hear that.
So like I said, the leaders of our of our national teams, the guys who are the leaders like Adam Stern and Morneau and those guys. And, you know, they wear the Maple Leaf so proudly that, and they give back so well, and they let us know about it. They, you know, whether they let us know verbally or just what they do in their off seasons and or what they're doing to promote the game, it just shows, you know, the young guys coming up into the national program, you know, what it means to represent baseball in Canada.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your minor league career. You had a lot of ups and a lot of downs. Specifically, what were the best moments in your minor league career, the ones that stand out?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of ups and downs. 2007 with the Cubs, had kind of that breakout year. You know, they, you know, the big saying, the jump from A ball to double A. So I got plucked away from Washington Nationals in the minor league Rule 5 draft with the Cubs, and it was a bit of a blessing. I'm not sure where my career would have been if I kept on with the Nationals. And so just kind of that little bit of luck there too, but jumping to the Cubs, and they put me in a good situation, jumped me up to double A. That was kind of my second year pitching out of the bullpen, and they threw me in a late inning role, either eighth inning or ninth inning, and just had an opportunity to go out there and just give it all I had for an inning. I think that was just a big moment in my career where I could just go out there and do all I could. And that's where I started to see a little bit of jump in velocity and everything. And there were talks about call-ups in September and stuff like that. So that year was the first year I knew I had what it could take to get to the big league. So I'd say that 07 season with the Cubs.
Great. I wanted to ask you about, it's funny that you mentioned the Rule 5 draft and the Cubs. Your first appearance when you made the big leagues with Milwaukee, that was ironically against Washington. And you struck out the first batter you saw. Now, was there a little bit of higher tensions there? I mean, obviously, you get the fact that you're making your major league debut, but against your old club that, you know, left you unprotected in the Rule 5 there, was that in the back of your mind at all when you made that appearance, or...?
It was kind of like a full circle kind of moment. Sure. Drafted by the Expos, who turned the Nationals, and then the first batter I faced was Roger Bernardino, who was an ex-teammate. I played with him for, you know, 3-4 years with the Expos Nationals, and I had Randy Knorr, who was the bench coach, as a manager for 2 years. So there's a little bit of that comfort level, you know, that most people don't get in their big league debuts, I'm sure. But yeah, it was just kind of a neat moment just to think about, you know, how far it's come and all the 10 years in the minor leagues and starting in 03 and ending up in the big leagues in 2012.
And it was really wild because how many people could say they made their major league debut and got the order on 9 pitches? You know, something else.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And you know, Jonathan LaCroix was just on a rehab stint with us in Nashville and AAA, so I had thrown to him 2 days earlier, so just a, you know, even at 29 years old, I mean, your debut, you're just as nervous as an 18-year-old would be, I'm guessing. I know what I was, but just to have that comfort level out there, it was pretty big in that first outing.
Absolutely. Now you mentioned the fact that of your age when you broke into the majors, you played 10 seasons in minor league baseball. What really kept you motivated during that stretch to continue on? Just obviously the light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, you're just that close to the big leagues. But 10 years is a long time, and it takes a special type of person to make that commitment over that amount of time, and just especially with the injuries and all that was kind of stacking up. What just kept you wanting to go out and pitch every year in the minor leagues?
Well, you know, you play the first few years, and you, those are just kind of your stepping stones, and you're just kind of learning as you go. So I was a starting pitcher to begin with, and then moved to the bullpen, so I figured, you know, I'd give this bullpen thing a try. And then, yeah, I had that successful season in 07, and then 2008 I went down with had shoulder surgery, and I missed that season. So through that, you know, I think, you know, rehab for some guys can get you down, and other times you know, you work so hard. Like, I know that 08 season when I was rehabbing my shoulder that whole year, I just kept on working. And when I was with the Cubs Dempster and some guys that call me down to the big league side to work out, and you just kind of see how these guys work and how they act, and you just want to be in their position. So I just kind of owed it to myself. You know, you work so hard through your rehab process, you don't want to give up right away. So and what happened after the rehab process is the Cubs released me. They didn't really even give me a chance to come back from it, and I had no options, but the only option that King Colin was the Brewers, and they had a job for me back in low A. So, it was either go to low A with the Brewers or go to independent ball. I was looking at a team independent ball to sign with. So, I kind of talked to some people about it, and I said, well, you might as well be in affiliate ball rather than independent ball and stay in the system. So,
cool.
It's just kind of one of those things where you just owe it to yourself. And I wanted to see how the shoulder would bounce back, and from that point forward, I just kept on looking to the next day of the next year, and just set my goals again. Kind of had to restart the whole career. So you get to see yourself jump up every level, for the second time. I really didn't think anything of it. I was just looking forward to getting back up to AAA.
Absolutely. Now you had mentioned that the Brewers came, so obviously Doug Melvin there, the GM of the Brewers, who's got so much Canadian content in his system. It's really, really remarkable for Canadians, and the fact that he's Canadian himself, only is a feather in the cap. Now the two of you actually went into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame during the same ceremony there. He was obviously inducted as his work as a GM, and then you went in as a member of the 2011 Pan Am team. How was that, knowing that, at that point, there's your GM, and you're kind of at the same level there, getting inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it's pretty neat. For him to come so far as he has in the game, to be a GM of a big league team is remarkable. And then for us, with that Pan Am game win, the first gold. So those are, two big moments that happened that year. I talked to Brock Calgard about it. He was rehabbing, so he got to go up to the ceremony with Doug Melvin, and just said that everybody's just really proud of everybody in the Brewers organization. I know Doug and Gord Ash have done a great job getting us noticed, and I'm glad they're honored for it.
And it really is remarkable if you take a look at the Canadian talent that is involved in the Brewers organization, even players like yourself, at the big league level, making an impact. It's really great to see.
I just wanted to ask, is that evident in the clubhouse? Do you guys have a Canadian group, a Canadian clique? Is there any Canadian-American bantering that goes on in your clubhouse?
We're kind of losing it now since Axford's gone and stuff, but a little bit in spring training there, and we don't really talk about it too much, but during the WBC, I think we had the most participants in the Brewers system that played in the WBC, so there's quite a bit of banter there, a little side bets going on, but we had LaCroix and Braun in the USA team, we had Gallardo and Estrada in the Mexican team, so in that first round, we already had a bunch of players with me, Taylor Green, and that John Ashford. So there was quite a bit of banter going on in that first round within the clubhouse and spring training this past year.
I wanted to ask you about your call-up to the big leagues. I know the story. It's one of my favorites, but I'm hoping you can share it for our listeners.
Yeah, just a regular day in AAA in Nashville. I was closing for the team at that point, and we were winning the game handily. I don't know how handily, maybe 7-2 or something was the score. But we win the game, and we're giving the high fives down the line, and Mikey Guerrero, our manager, is kind of reminding everybody that we have a team meeting. Nothing was posted or anything. It was just like, he was just kind of telling everybody as we're smacking hands there that we have a team meeting, and we hardly held any team meetings that year. I think we had a little struggle at the beginning of the year, and we held a players meeting, but that was it. So we all figured something was up, So we head back to the locker room. I don't think Mikey Grail knew the situation, but he comes into the locker room and he just kind of says, you know, I have a couple things to say. First thing is, we have a group of girls who were down the right field line, and they felt like they're being harassed by some of the members of the bullpen. And we just kind of, all the guys in the bullpen just kind of looked at each other, and we just kind of rolled our eyes because we knew nothing happened. Matter of fact, there was like a group, like a couple busloads of girls and some boys that were taking a visit to Vanderbilt. And I don't think Mikey Grail actually knew they were there because they were only there for a couple of innings. But that was just a side story. But yeah, he just said there were some girls. They felt like being harassed. So yeah, after the guys in the bullpen just kind of looked at each other, he's like, ah. They described him as a tall fellow, you know, Canadian guy. So of course everybody looks at me, and I know he's just joking around. And then he tries to get even more serious. He goes, no, there's a police officer outside. He'd like to ask you some questions. And I knew the whole time it was a joke, but everybody's kind of looking at me. And then he said, the second thing is, you know, you play this game a long time. You keep a uniform on your back. You know, grind away. And he just looked at me and said, you're going to the big leagues. Quite a moment. I, you know, tried to get me with the joke first, but quite a moment to do it in front of the team. A lot of guys in AAA have had, a cup of coffee, or we had Corey Patterson in the locker room who played nine big league seasons. And a lot of the guys in the room knew my story. They knew I'd played 10 years. And it was a really special moment for me to share it with those guys. You know, they went crazy because, you know, there's other guys in that locker room who've never made it to the big leagues and have grinded just like me. So it was a good story for them, and they can remember that. And hopefully, keep pushing them.
On to the big leagues. Taking over as the closer, what was that like when you first were told that you were going to be the closer?
I didn't really think too much of it because I just felt like I was just holding the job for a bit. I felt like that for probably 90% of my big league career now, this last year and a half. I'm just kind of holding the spot for somebody because, Axer was so dominant in his first 3 years there. He has over 100 saves already. So, and then K-Rod's in there as well. He was joining the mix as well. I mean, last year, 2012, when I got those save opportunities, I was just kind of like, I was still just trying to calm the nerves of just being out there and getting familiar with the big league level. So it really wasn't added pressure. I was going out there trying to do my best, focusing on the glove. I didn't really put too much pressure on myself because I knew that, if I did fail, that, Axford and K-Rod, two veteran closers, are right there to back me up. So I didn't think too much of it. This year, again, just kind of up and down. You know, Axford started off as a closer, then I came in again. I think everybody expected Axford to get the job back. He continued to struggle a bit, and then I hurt my hamstring, and K-Rod came in, and he held down the job for a bit, so... It was just kind of, it's kind of been a roller coaster so far as far as the closer's role for me. But, you know, Axford being, K-Rod and Axford being traded this year, it was just, kind of opened up the door for me. And the second half of the season, I tried to sink my teeth into it as much as possible. But, I know things change. There's not that many closers in the league that are your dominant closers. You got Kimbrel, you got Papelbon, Mariano, those guys have been closers for most of their career, and I know closers come and go, and we see it all the time. So my focus is just to get the three outs as best I can. I'm not going to try to overthink things out there and just try not to beat myself. But, we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to the opportunity. I feel like I pitched my best in the ninth inning. I enjoy the pressure situations. I enjoy... being out there when the game's on the line and locking down the win for the team.
No, you really do have closer stuff. I mean, you have a fastball that gets up to 95 miles an hour, you know, kind of like a wipeout slider, and then you can also mix in a two-seam up there. And you what's really impressive is your delivery. It's almost, I like to refer to it as kind of like a slingshot. You kind of sling across. It's hard to pick up as a hitter, not to say that I've ever faced anybody with your type of closer stuff, but do you feel like that's... I know you talked about, you know, being comfortable, but is that where you honestly see yourself moving forward? You want to maintain that closer spot? You want to, you know, obviously pitch to the best of your abilities, but use the tools that you have to kind of keep that spot on lock?
Yeah, I think anybody who pitches in the bullpen wants to be that guy at the end of the game, and that's what I want to be as well. I'm kind of a max effort guy, so I go up there and I give it all I have every pitch. So I have to work out in the off season as hard as I pitch. I need to go hard. I want to continue and try to maintain it as long as I can. I do have a short window. I'm 31 years old now. I broke in a little late, so if I can hold down a closer's role for 3-4 years, that would be a dream. So I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, there are a lot of things that are out of control when you're a closer, but that's my goal. I do want to keep the job, but I understand the game and the business as well.
You had mentioned that you know, obviously taking the time in the off season to do your workout routine, to be in the weight room is vital to you know, maintaining that that strength out there. You recently moved to Phoenix, and that was to be closer to the spring training facility. How's that been for you? Is that part of your off season plan? Obviously, you're grinding it out. You want to take it as seriously as possible. You want to continue improving. How's that been for you so far?
Oh, it's been great. Last off season, I took advantage of the NHL lockout, and I called up the Calgary Flames guys, and I was in there. I was in there with their training staff every day, and that really got me ready for last year. And obviously, can't use them this year, so made the move down here to Phoenix, and just to be around the trainers. You know, if you need some, you know, with the hamstring injury I had this year, to get the hands on with the trainers and do some manual exercises, some strengthening stuff to keep, you know, that back issues in the past, keep the back strong, and just to get stronger in every aspect. You know. Sometimes, you know, as a guy working out, you want to go into the gym with no plan and kind of look at the board and see what they have for you, or, you know, you don't always want to, it's kind of mentally draining too if you have to go in there and put together your whole workout. So when they have some things laid out for you, it's good just to go in there and I always think you work out better with somebody watching or you know, with a group of friends or something. You try to push each other or you have somebody pushing you. So, you know, I really enjoy going into the facility. I know a lot of guys on the team think I'm crazy. You know, they want to get as far away from baseball as possible, or the Brewers or their affiliates or their baseball diamonds in general. But I don't really care. I enjoy going into the, you know, going into the weight room and seeing those guys. A gym's a gym to me. So it's been going well so far.
I think again that just speaks to your perseverance in the game and just wanting to grind that out. It's almost like a Canadian mentality you tend to see. It's like a hockey mentality, almost, where you just want to keep going and keep improving yourself regardless of the situation. And obviously, you know, it worked for you last year, and I'm sure it's going to do wonders for you again this year. It's just great to see that, you know, someone is as passionate as you are as going and doing, you know, staying on top of your game like that. That's great.
Yeah, I always say that the next year is the biggest year. No matter,
absolutely.
I think no matter what kind of athlete you are, whether you're Sidney Crosby, Wayne Gretzky, Tiger Woods, I still think, you know, they probably put that same preparation in to get better each year. So that's the same attitude I take.
Do you have any personal specific goals for this coming season?
I don't. You play in the minor leagues. When you play in the minor leagues for so long, it's so kind of individual. You know, everybody. You know, you're not. It's competitive, but you're just developing and trying to get to the big leagues. And, you know, wins and losses don't really matter that much. And for some reason, this past season just kind of left a bad taste on my mouth as far as, you know, how much we lost. We had success when I got called up in 2012. And then, you know, we play in a tough division. We were the only division in baseball that had three teams in the playoffs. So it wasn't very fun to lose. I don't enjoy it. So my only goal for next year is just for us to win. That's basically it. And like I said, to be a small part of that, to go out in the ninth inning and try to close it down and close out of victories, it means a lot to me because that's what it's all about. Like, you know, it's a team sport. A lot of times it gets individualized in baseball, but in the end, it's a team sport. And you saw the Boston Red Sox. They came together as a team this year, and it was fun watching the playoffs and fun watching those two teams get after it. So that's the goal for next year.
I wanted to ask you about some of the changes to the game of baseball, specifically replay, and what you think about replay and its introduction to the game.
I think it's okay. Obviously, as a pitcher, I don't want the strike zone to be messed with, and I don't think it's going to be, but otherwise, you know, I it's fair, I guess. It's, you know, historians might want to keep it the way it is, and, you know, it's kind of a game that's been watched by the eyes and the umpire and judgment calls, but you know, there's going to be times where it's going to help me, and times, you know, especially in the ninth inning, it's going to, I could lose or win a ball game at that point. So I'm sure I'm going to have some mixed reactions whenever it happens to me. But yeah, it's hard to say right now whether I'm going to like it or not. But it is fair, you know. I know when calls do go my way, I'm going to be excited about it. And if calls don't go my way, I'm going to be understandable, though, at least. You know, it's not going to be, you know, there's going to be no personal grudges. You can't think what could have happened or get mad at something. It is what it is. So it should be good for the game, as long as it doesn't delay it too much, though. We don't want to be sitting out there, especially as a pitcher, you don't want to be sitting out there and waiting for a long time for them to make a decision.
And that's it for today's episode. Special thanks to Jim Henderson for coming on the show, as well as Effective Business Video for the production and the Isotopes for providing the music. Make sure you check them out on iTunes. Going forward, you can expect more from this show. Andrew and I will be working hard to do even more episodes covering even more topics on Canadian baseball. If you have suggestions for the show, we want to hear them. You can email us at podcast@CanadianBaseballNetwork.com.
For Peter B., and I'm Andrew Hendricks. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.